on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the Interurban Lofts proudly present The Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan.
Good morning, my neighbors!
It's showtime!
I just want to be valued as a left tackle. That's a position that I'm very comfortable playing, that I really enjoy playing, that, you know, I was groomed to play since as a child. And to me, man, that's really the main priority.
You specifically said left tackle.
Absolutely.
Is that a concern when you have conversations with designation into how you're viewed potentially as a right tackle?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things, man. I'm somewhat an anomaly, you know what I mean? I ran a 5.85. I'm not the best athlete in the world. You know, I've got this funny body with my arms and all these different things, man. And my style of play necessarily isn't what you see from the premier guys necessarily. And, you know, it's always been like that for me on every single level. But I was a unanimous All-American in college. Mm-hmm. I'm a four-time Pro Bowler and a Super Bowl champion today. So, and that's all been done at left tackle.
Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Marco Marquez ready to roll because March Madness is here. Come on, give me the March Madness CBS basketball music theme song. Play it. Got to get people fired up today. This is a good song. This is just a good song, all right? I need someone to write some words to this song.
Jordan in the corner!
Right. You
know. Oh, Leitner! Turn around!
His voice is
strange. I don't know.
Sounds like the announcer's testicles were being squeezed. I get what you mean, though. But I mean, like, lyrics to the song, you know. Basketball is here too. I mean, March Madness is here. Hey, what's that familiar feeling? Some butterflies, a little bit nervousness? Are you a Mizzou fan that's been waiting for your team to get back in the tournament and now all of a sudden, like, ooh, what's this? What's this all about? I'm a little bit nervous. This is fun. Let's do this every year.
You're feeling it?
Now listen to that little guitar. Crank that up, see? I'd like to see this song performed live at the Final Four. Here we go. And we don't have to wait long, thank goodness. And maybe, K-State fan, you're happy you don't have to interrupt work or school or whatever to watch your squad because you can watch them on Friday at 8:40, but I need to get right to it. I can't be waiting another 36 hours, so I'm glad the basketball gods made that happen for me. But everything starts at 11:15 Central Time with the first game, West Virginia and Maryland, an 8-9 matchup. We're going to go through. We're going to have two opportunities. We'll have to do the first half at 7:30, then the second half at 9:30, our Border Patrol bracketology. Uh-huh. This would be your first time for this, huh? First time going through this? And see, all we do is we play that song you just played for the entire segment, and we go through all the games in chronological order as they'll be televised today, and we play Border Patrol Bracketology, where I tell you who's going to win, and then Nate says his piece, and if it's 2-0, we move on. If it's 1-1, then you got to be the tiebreaker. We have different, we take turns being the tiebreaker. And then if there's the upset, if we all agree that there's going to be an upset, a lower seed wins, we play the infamous upset special sounder that people have grown to love over the years.
Upset special.
See?
Upset special. Oh, my word.
We're hoping for many upsets today, but not too many.
We've already made one upset claim public that we kind of have to go through with.
Where did that come? Who decided on that, by the way? I got Miami going to the Sweet 16, so it's like Border Patrol says Miami will be upset. Like, do they?
Listen, I propose one question to you guys, and team names just start getting thrown out. So I just picked one.
I told you who I thought, and then Nate got all pissy with me, and so I said, well, okay, then it's not a real question then. Okay, I thought the way the question was phrased to me is what top seed? Top seed means number one seed. And so I thought the question was, what number one seed will lose first? And so I gave that answer, and now we got a 5 seed going out. So I don't know, you picked Miami. That's fine. I'm not going to stand behind it, but it's, you know, whatever. But then our underdog pick to go far is Missouri. So Nate didn't want to do that either. But guess what? Nate doesn't get to pick. I do. And the upset special to go far in the tournament is Mizzou.
Oh, yeah.
Shut up. Anywho, 12:40 p.m. on TNT, the 10-seed Utah State take on the 7-seed Mizzou in the South Region at the Golden One Center in Sacramento, California. Then around 20 minutes later, the 16-seed Howard takes on the number 1-seed Kansas in the West Region at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, Iowa. That's on TBS. So that'll have us all wrapped up. I would imagine West Virginia and Maryland could be a fun finish that we'll get to check out during those games. But then after that, the other highlight games for me, and most people will want to watch this anyway. Hopefully, Mizzou fans will be in a good mood after beating Utah State so they can watch two of their rivals, Illinois and Arkansas, butt heads in the 8-9 game in the West, and then Kansas fans will want to watch that because they'll play the winner. That should be a good game. That's one of my top two or three matchups in the first round anyway between Arkansas and Illinois. I'm picking Arkansas, but I don't know. Last time I was rooting for Arkansas or picked Arkansas, they laid down against Kentucky and cost Mizzou the 3-seed in the SEC tournament. So whenever I'm pulling for Arkansas, it does not end well. And then also that's going to be at around 3:30 on TBS. Then just before 6 o'clock on TNT, another really good game, 8-9 matchup between Iowa and Auburn. I think Oral Roberts and Duke could end up being a good game. Oral Roberts was undefeated in their conference, won their tournament, won 30 games, and they're taking on Duke. Then after that, I think Penn State and Texas A&M will be good. I think Texas A&M was underseeded, and Penn State, I like. I kind of went into the tournament thinking whoever Penn State's going to be matched up against, I'm going to pick them because I thought they'd be a 10 seed. I'm going to pick them as a minor upset. And then I didn't realize A&M was going to be a 7 mm-hmm. seed. I thought they were going to be a 6 or a 5. Like, oh, boy, do I still follow through with that? So I still have Penn State winning, although I don't feel great about it. I kind of predetermined that, and I didn't want to back off of it. But I do think that's going to be a good matchup. That's going to be one of the late games. Other than that, I've seen some people picking Louisiana over Tennessee because Tennessee's been rough without their point guard. We'll see about that. Boise State, Northwestern could be decent. But mid-afternoon's going to be really good, a couple of 8-9 matchups. But exciting times, and hopefully we'll get some good action and good results from the early group of games. Come on, Mizzou, just give me a win in the NCAA tournament. Then it's all gravy. Arizona, whatever. It's good. I've already been invited out to watch the game someplace, and I didn't say no yet, but I've got to say no. Can't do it. I'll see how I felt today. Can't do it. Got to watch it alone.
Got to be in a room by yourself.
Just gonna be home. I want to pay attention to the game, and I don't love watching the game out in public. But when I do, it's hard because sometimes there's a lot of talking going on. I want to hear what the broadcast crew is saying. and I'm like super excited to watch this game. I mean, win or lose, it's been a really, really good season. First season under Dennis Gates. Hope they can get a win in the tournament. Utah State now favored by one point. Utah State, according to Vegas. But yeah, I just want to kind of, you know, it doesn't happen, and hopefully it's going to change with Dennis Gates. But like when I was younger, like Norm Stewart and great teams, I would expect every year for Mizzou to be in the tournament. They didn't usually play very well in the tournament, but I would expect them to be a tournament team every year. And even into, you know, Quinn Snyder and then to Mike Anderson, that was the expectation. And then it, you know, it kind of got lost in the Frank Haith era, and then it was strangled to death in the Kim Anderson. I like Kim Anderson, but I mean, it was, you know, there was, the expectations were murdered in that era. And then Konzo Martin didn't do much to help it. Started off strong, but then just went away. And so it's happened enough to where I fully appreciate Mizzou being back into the tournament. And I know now to never take it for granted. And so I really just want to kind of sit and watch and take it all in. And, you know, don't get this very often. Don't get this, you know.
You want to be in the moment.
Yeah.
Today. No, yeah. I had a
buddy. Don't want to be distracted. I want to hear it. I want to see it. I want to pay attention to the game, everything.
Right. I'm approaching it the same way that approached the Tennessee game in the SEC tournament. It's just one of those, going to be rooting for a win, but if they don't get it, it doesn't take away from what this season has meant for Mizzou. So,
re-engaged the fan base.
Yeah.
Made Mizzou Arena a fun place to go watch basketball again. Created a home court advantage again. They've accomplished many, many things in this season, but I'd like to see the icing on the cake be an NCAA tournament win today against Utah State. Come on.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So there you go. We'll talk a lot of college basketball. Today on the show, we are going to kind of jump around. We never say no to Buster Olney, and I'm sure Buster's still furious about Vanderbilt being snubbed from this field. And so we'll check in with Buster Olney and get his thoughts. Oh, my God, did you see what happened last night in the WBC? That is unbelievable. That's like every major league team's worst nightmare. In a post-game celebration after winning the game, Edwin Diaz, I mean, arguably the best reliever in baseball, and just signed a fat new contract to stay with the Mets. They were just like, his teammates were jumping up and down around him after the after a huge win to advance to the quarterfinals. And then he just like collapsed in the middle of the crowd of players, and he hurt his knee. I mean, you remember back when Kendrys Morales,
yeah,
when he played for the Angels, hit a, was it a game-winning home run or whatever? And
yeah, walk-off grand slam.
Yeah, and then jumped onto home plate and broke his leg, shattered his leg. That's the first thing I thought of. The Mets sent out a statement overnight saying that he's having his knee examined, and they don't have, he's undergoing tests, and they don't have any results yet. But, I mean, I don't even want to say it. You know, hey, we all know the players from the Royals that are taking part in the WBC. Can you imagine one of those guys? But I mean, it's even worse for Edwin Diaz. The amount of money that they just spent on him, and he's one of. I don't know. We always play the song for Jesse, right? For Jesse Newell, Narcos.
Mm-hmm.
When he walked, that's one of the best moments right now in baseball, when Edwin Diaz walks to the mound when he's in a home game for the New York Mets to come in and close the game. And it was an emotional game. I haven't really totally got into the WBC yet, but I was fired up watching that game between Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. And, I mean, Puerto Rico was so fired up, and they were celebrating, they were jumping up and down. And Edward Diaz hurts his right knee during the on-field celebration. And I assumed it was really bad because his brother, Alexis Diaz, who's a closer for the Cincinnati Reds, was like, he was so emotional, he was crying because his brother had just gotten hurt. And they just had this emotional victory to advance to the quarterfinals of the WBC. Ah, boy. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's going to be we're right in quarterfinal time for that one. Cuba now in the semifinals, and U.S. plays Venezuela. I guess that might be the game that Nate would probably be going to this Saturday. Right? Then, yeah,
is that where he is right now? Is he already at that game?
No, it's where he's gonna. He's talking about he's going to Miami this weekend.
Right. That was being funny.
Salvi.
What was his contract that he signed?
Edwin Diaz?
Yeah.
He's slated to make just under $20 million this year, but he signed a five-year, $102 million contract.
Good God. And that was out there laying on the ground after a celebration in the WBC game. The Mets fans are melting down on Twitter. We will take a break when we come back. There was a bunch of news about the Chiefs. There's a bunch of news now about former Chiefs, officially, Orlando Brown Jr., Juju Smith-Schuster, Juan Thornhill, Colin Saunders, all former Chiefs. We'll talk about who they signed with after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, let's see if I can keep up with all the signings from yesterday of players leaving the Kansas City organization. Juan Thornhill signed with the Cleveland Browns a three-year, $21 million contract with $14 million fully guaranteed at signing over the first 2 years. Juan Thornhill is a Cleveland Brown. A Cleveland Brown after starting 52 games for the Chiefs in his career. Juju Smith-Schuster signs with the New England Patriots. And we were speculating about what the Jacoby Myers and the Alan Lazard signings were going to do to his market. I mean, right in line around $11 million a year, pretty much the same as those two signings, four-year deal for Jacoby Myers, three-year deal for Alan Lazard with the Jets. A three-year, $33 million deal Juju Smith-Schuster signs with the Patriots. He'll make $22.5 million over the first 2 years of the deal, according to Adam Schefter. And several people reported that the Chiefs were in it and tried to keep him, but New England offered more money. And so when it came down to staying with Kansas City, because they did want him, they did try to retain him, or getting a little bit more money from the Patriots, Juju went with more money in the Patriots and gets $22.5 million over the first 2 years of the deal, the three-year, $33 million deal. Also, so Thornhill goes to the Browns, Juju goes to the Patriots, Colin Saunders, he leaves and signs with the New Orleans Saints. He gets a three-year, $12 million deal with $8 million guaranteed in that deal. And then late last night, you might have missed it, but you probably didn't, Orlando Brown Jr., he is finally off the market, and he signs with the Cincinnati Bengals. Ooh, boy. That rivalry just got even better. He signed a four-year, $64.092 million front-loaded deal with the Bengals that includes an over $31 million signing bonus, largest ever for an offensive lineman. That's according to Tom Pelissero. According to Ian Rappaport, Brown's new four-year deal with the Bengals, he gets 67.87% of the $64 million fully guaranteed, with $42.3 million through year two and $49.9 million through year three. And then by that point, he'll be probably ready for the next deal. And no, on paper, it doesn't look like at all the same offer or anything close to the same offer that the Chiefs made him last year. But again, that was a lot of fluff. And so it's actually not too far off the guaranteed money and what he's going to get. And he goes to the Bengals. And he said that it was very important that he remains a left tackle for the legacy to follow through with for the legacy of his father. Clearly, there were some teams, I guess, reportedly, including the Chicago Bears, that wanted to sign him as a right tackle. And he wanted to play left tackle. And that's what he's going to do in Cincinnati, where he is a good fit with what they do. And they're trying to protect Joe Burrow. I mean, you think about that loss in the AFC Championship game at Arrowhead Stadium. They had the ball with a couple of minutes left with a chance to win. What prevented them from winning, Marco? They couldn't what? They couldn't protect Joe Burrow.
Chris Jones got in the way.
That's right. They couldn't protect Joe Burrow. Now they get Orlando Brown Jr., and we'll see if that helps them protect Joe Burrow. Orlando Brown Jr., after signing with the Bengals, said, "I'm super thankful for the opportunity to carry on my father's legacy and be a left tackle. It was important to be able to play that position and play for a winning team and a winning quarterback. Who day?"
Who day?
Man. And just for me, okay, based on what I thought was going to happen going into the offseason, I thought the Chiefs were going to sign Orlando Brown Jr. to another franchise tag. I thought the Chiefs were going to re-sign Juju. Juan Thornhill was gone. He was never going to come back. That's why they drafted Cook, and they were never going to match a deal like what the Browns gave him. That was done. And so that was no surprise at all. I thought the Chiefs were going to bring back Colin Saunders. I'll be honest with you. I was surprised by that. And maybe it was just because I wanted them to, but I thought there was at least a decent chance that they would bring back Colin Saunders.
Yeah. Yeah, him over Nadi for sure.
But then, a couple of weeks into the offseason, then you find out, oh boy, the Chiefs aren't going to tag OBJ. And things started to deteriorate from there. Then I no longer had the expectation that he'd be on the team next year. Then, of course, Juwan Taylor happens, and then you know he's gone. And so that was not a surprise that he signed with someone else. It is. I didn't really hear anything about him and the Bengals. It makes sense after the fact, but I thought that was somewhat surprising. I'm surprised Juju Smith-Schuster signed with the Patriots, and it didn't seem like that was the kind of offer that would have knocked the Chiefs out of the water or out of the running, but. You know, 22.5 guaranteed for the first 2 years, 3 years, $33 million. I don't think that's an outrageous deal. The only thing you have to question is whether or not his knee holds up. And if the Chiefs thought, you know what, we'll bring him back at a certain price, but if it gets to that threshold, and we're not going to match it. If it surpasses what we think he's worth, and if you factor in the risk of his knee problems, then we're not going to go past that mark that we set. Then you got to trust the Chiefs because they just spent a year with him, and his knee was a problem off and on, and that was going back to when the Chiefs signed him. Adam Kaplan, our NFL insider, told us that one of the reasons that Juju was unable to land a multi-year deal when he was a free agent leaving Pittsburgh was because there were concerns about his knee. And that's why he ended up signing a one-year deal with Kansas City. It was a prove-it deal. He proved it. He still had problems with his knee, but he proved to be a very effective receiver for the Chiefs. Was he a superstar? No, he was good. And he had a hell of a second half in the Super Bowl and helped this team win a championship. And he was a good blocker and a good good locker room guy. Teammates liked him. And so I'll be honest with you. I had nothing bad to say about any of those guys. All those guys I have good memories of. And, you know, okay, Orlando Brown Jr. People are mad because he didn't take the Chiefs offer and wanted more money and wanted to play left tackle. He came here via trade and had two solid seasons with the Chiefs and helped the Chiefs win a Super Bowl championship. And was he great? No, was he elite? But he played some pretty good football in the postseason and helped the Chiefs win. And so congrats on his new deal, playing left tackle. Look forward to beating him and the Bengals in the playoffs. I'll have nothing but great thoughts about Juju. He came here for a year, helped the Chiefs make up for the loss of Tyreek Hill, had a terrific second half in that Super Bowl, and helped the Chiefs get a ring. He wanted a little bit more money to go to New England. Hey, man, congrats. Thanks for the memories. Thanks for helping the Chiefs win a Super Bowl. You won't sniff one in New England. And you probably will be in fourth place in that division. That's just the truth. But more money was more important to him. That's great. But I have nothing but good things, good memories of his time in Kansas City. I really, really like Colin Saunders. I liked him in the locker room. I liked interviewing him. I liked him on Twitter. I thought he played a very good second half of the year, and I thought he was really good in the playoffs. And I think he got paid. Unfortunately, it's with the Saints, but I'm happy for him. And I was happy when the Chiefs drafted him. I enjoyed watching him. And no one talked about him in training camp. And it seemed like he was on the bubble, and he forced his way on the team. And then in the second half and in the postseason, he played very well and helped the Chiefs win a championship. And I'm glad he got paid. He goes to the Saints. Wish it would have been with the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs thought it was too much. Again, congrats. Thanks for helping the Chiefs win a championship. I feel the same way about Juan Thornhill. Always had good interactions with him. I thought that knee injury robbed a lot of his promise from when he was first drafted in the second round. And I think last year he just started to become the player the Chiefs thought he could be, but maybe never reached the promise that he had. And the Chiefs, he was a good player, right? But I don't think he was the player he could have been without that knee injury. But I think he's back to being a solid safety. I don't think the Chiefs will miss him too much. But again, good guy, helped the Chiefs win. We'll have nothing but good memories. Glad he went and got paid with the Cleveland Browns. So that's one of the things that sucks about having there's not too many things that suck about having a Super Bowl champion football team to root for. But your players become very attractive to other teams. And even role players get contract offers that you just can't make sense of. Like, you know what, we'd love to keep you, but you are worth more to them than you are to us. And so it's just, you got to make some painful decisions and move on. And that was, boy, yesterday he's going, okay, wrap your head around Colin Saunders. Okay, Juju's leaving. Oh, Thornhill's leaving. Oh, we're like, hey, slow down here. Wait a minute. Let me wrap my head around all these one by one before the rest of the team leaves. That's it. I know people are mad, but guess what? It's March 16th, and the Chiefs got some more salary cap room after finagling Patrick Mahomes' contract. We talk about that. They still got many moves to make, 11 draft picks. It's all good in this hood. And they got Super Bowl rings, all right? Trust in Veach. In Veach we trust, says Marco. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Well, I got something good for you. Field Yates reported last night from ESPN that the Chiefs had converted $12 million of Patrick Mahomes' 2023 roster bonus into a signing bonus, creating $9.6 million in cap space to give the Chiefs more flexibility throughout free agency. And as Matt Derrick pointed out, that's only about one-third of Mahomes' $34.4 million roster bonus, creating the $9.6 million in cap space while adding $2.4 million in dead cap over the next 5 years. A small drop in the bucket and doesn't create issues for reworking this deal in the future. So They ain't going to do that unless they got something planned. So sit back and let's see what Brett Veach and the Chiefs do with that newfound salary cap space. All right, let's play a couple of clips from college basketball. Let's hear first from Dennis Gates as Mizzou will get ready to take on Utah State in the 7-10 matchup in the South region at 12:40 p.m. on TNT out in Sacramento. Here is two Gates clips, right? All right. We'll play Dennis Gates here. Talks about making the NCAA tournament as a good first step for Mizzou.
It's a prestigious tournament, and I truly believe the history speaks for itself. Sometimes we get locked into the seedings and different things like that, but all teams that's invited are really, really good teams. Great coaches. There's a tradition in it. There's a want to advance in it, and it's very important to each team. Everyone's preparing, as we saw games last night, and we'll see more games today. And they're possession by possession games. So we just hope all of our conference games, all of our preseason scheduling has prepared us for the moment. I know our players, our staffs, they're all going to work hard, work their very best to be prepared. And that's what we're going to continue to do. And that's what we've done in the past.
Here, Dennis Gates said that you can't sleep on Utah State.
You can go across the board. They have five players in double digits. That's not an easy stat line to consistently have throughout the year, and they've been able to demonstrate that. They've had different players earn, whether it's a sixth man of the year or first team all conference. They're a team that has had camaraderie when it comes down to returning and retention from an NIT team last season. So you have those dynamics in place, but also they come from a great conference.
All right, that was Dennis Gates, head coach of the Missouri Tigers, as they take on a very good Utah State team today at around 12:40.
If Utah State's cold, I'm calling a blowout right now for Missouri.
Really?
It's all that those Aggies got going for them. Just 3-point shooting.
That's all they got. All right. Call it, man.
I'm gonna say right now that DeMoy Hodge is gonna clog up those passing lanes. I think Kobe Brown is gonna get a double double on the day. But
what about Muhammad Diarra?
Four drop balls.
Stop it. Stop.
No. Muhammad, I'm curious to see. This could be a type of game where he could grab some boards also. Curious to see how they utilize him on the in the defense. Since this is a 3-point heavy shooting team in Utah State, are they going to pull him out on the perimeter? Is his length going to be cause an issue for the shooters? That'll be something to watch for. Yeah, maybe two block shots.
Utah State's favored by a point. Over under is 155.5. For the 10-7 matchup on TNT in the South region out in Sacramento at 12:40 p.m., Utah State and Missouri. About 20 minutes later, in Des Moines, in the West region, the number one seed Kansas will take on the number 16 seed Howard. Here, Norm Roberts, will start with the top, was asked about the challenge of trying to repeat as national champs.
Well, it is difficult, but you know, the tough thing is that when you're at Kansas, I shouldn't say the tough thing. The good thing is when you're at Kansas, you're always getting everybody's best shot every single time you play. So it's just added on to us being national champions and those things. And we haven't really talked about that a ton. What we've talked about is staying in the moment and playing for now. This is a different team. What we accomplished last year was fantastic. We enjoy it. We're honored by it. But we also understand it's a whole new situation.
Norm Roberts also gave an update on Coach Bill Self.
He's doing well today. He was at practice today. He was at practice last night in all of our meetings. He's doing well. He's getting better all the time. We're hopeful, and everything is day-to-day with him. But he if you ask our guys, he got after him pretty good today. So he was doing really well.
It was his absence today from the media stuff. Is that just because he's just recuperating and tired, or could you just kind of talk about that?
Oh, he's getting his rest. He's getting his rest and that stuff. So, maybe he thinks that I talk too much, so he's letting me talk more. So, but he's just back getting some rest right now. He's doing good, though.
Right here, Norm Roberts was asked about getting Kevin McCullough back.
It's huge. It's huge. Well, you're talking about one of the best defensive players in the country in Kevin McCullough. I mean, he can guard a point guard or he can guard a center. Doesn't matter. And the other thing that Kevin does for us is he does so many little things as far as offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding, and then he's an extremely good cutter in our offense. So we missed him quite a bit in that game, but we knew he would be out because you got to go for the long haul and that stuff. But he was back today, and he was doing really well.
All right, and here is Jalen Wilson. He said that having doubters doesn't bother him.
Doubters is always a part of this tournament. I remember last year going to the Final Four, they gave us the worst percentage, or at least to win it all, and we ended up winning. So, you know, all those people who make percentages are people who are not on the court with us. You know, we control what we can control, and, you know, and how hard we play and how together we are. And, you know, we could care less about what someone thinks that we're going to do. You know, upsets happen every single year, so I'm not saying it can't happen to anyone, but, you know, we're confident in what we can do, and we don't really look to percentages and what people have us.
Kansas takes on Howard around 1 o'clock in the West Region 116 matchup in Des Moines at Wells Fargo Arena on TBS and right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Playing AAU coming up, you know, sometimes you have 8 o'clock games. Then you might have a back-to-back 8 o'clock, then 9:30. So, you know, it's nothing we haven't done in a while, but it's nothing we haven't done before. And I think we should be ready.
That was Kobe Brown talking about getting ready to play in the tournament out in California. Get that body clock right! Coming up on the show, we'll talk to Buster Olney at 7 o'clock. We'll start our Border Patrol bracketology at 7:30. Gary Lezak will then have the forecast. Man, we'll get to talk to Gary Dieter and Anthony Sherman about all the moves yesterday, all the signings, Chiefs players leaving Kansas City and signing with other teams. I'd like to get their thoughts on each one of those. Orlando Brown Jr. now with Cincinnati Bengals. Juju Smith-Schuster signing with the New England Patriots. Juan Thornhill goes to the Cleveland Browns. And Colin Saunders signs with the New Orleans Saints. Then we'll talk to John Sunbold at 9:05. And Sonny will help us break down the matchup between Mizzou and Utah State. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of breaking down to do of the matchup between Kansas and Howard. We had the Howard coach, Kenny Blakeney, on the show this week. Here's a couple of clips you can play from the press conference from Kenny Blakeney talking about Kansas. Let's play those, Marco, number 6 and 7. Here, Howard head coach Kenny Blakeney describes their style of play.
We just play a style that, for us, I think it's fun to watch and it's fun to play. I'm an inner city kid. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and we love playing inner city basketball. But there's a lot of structure to how we play as well. We want to play at a pace that's fast. We practice with a 14-second shot clock on missed shots. We try to get up and down the court within 6 seconds while we're practicing. So it's something that I think with, you know, from a perspective of players and fans, it's fun for both sides.
Here, Kenny Blakeney was asked if playing Kentucky earlier this season prepared them to face a team like Kansas.
Yeah, we had a chance to play Kentucky our first game. I think we're such a different team from our first game till now. We've gone through a number of different starting lineups until we found the rhythm. And then we were going, when our first game against Kentucky, we were going through a stretch of so many games at the beginning of our season. But I think having a chance to play a blue blood will give us a little bit of familiarity of what that feels like. But, you know, we're just fortunate to be on the same court as Kansas and honored to, you know, compete against a Hall of Fame coach like Bill Self.
Kansas favored by 22. The over-under is 146. So here's the full rundown of all the games in chronological order of how they'll be aired today on the TV. 11:15 a.m. on CBS. The 9 seed West Virginia and the 8 seed Maryland in the South region. At Legacy Arena in Birmingham, Alabama. Then at 11:40 on True TV, it's the 13 seed Furman against the 4 seed Virginia. That's in the South region at Amway Center in Orlando. At 12:40 p.m. on TNT, the 10 seed Utah State takes on the 7 seed Mizzou. Will Mizzou send Utah State through the gates of hell in this first round matchup in the South region at the Golden One Center in Sacramento? Then at 1 o'clock on TBS in the West, number 16 Howard takes on number 1 Kansas at the Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, Iowa. At 1:45, also on CBS, Texas A&M Corpus Christi, the 16 seed, takes on the number 1 seed in the South region and the number 1 overall seed, Alabama. That's in Birmingham. 2:10 on True TV, South region, 12:05 matchup, Charleston and San Diego State down in Orlando. 3:10, TNT, 15:02, Princeton and Arizona. That's in the South in Sacramento. 3:30 on TBS, the 8-9 matchup between Illinois and Arkansas in the West. 5:50, the Midwest, 8-9 matchup, Iowa and Auburn. 6:10 on CBS, 12:05 matchup between Oral Roberts and Duke. That's in the East. And then Texas will be in action, taking their first step towards Kansas City. They take on the 15-seed Colgate in the Midwest region. That's 6:25 on TBS. Then Boise State, Northwestern, Northern Kentucky, Houston, Louisiana, Tennessee, Penn State, Texas A&M, UNC Asheville, and UCLA. All that and more. Basketball, March Madness, let's go on Sports Radio 810 WHB.